Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Seattle Transit Blog Podcast. I'm Frank J. Cheery, the general manager here at Seattle Transit Blog.
I'm current Iowa caucus frontrunner, Martin Duke.
Welcome, Martin.
Good to have you again. Congratulations are in order.
Thank you very much. Yes, new baby. As I told our donors, I think, over a donor mailing list, born the opening day of the first Hill Street car, which I'm sure we'll get to, my new son.
That seems like a...
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure what to think about that.
Well, unlike the first Hill Street car, he was ahead of schedule, which I don't anticipate the first Hill Street car being all that often. Right. Yeah, so where I'm kind of getting into the... I'm getting a decent amount of sleep, but you know, it's going. It's a little bit groggy here, but we're working through it because we love our listeners and we want to give them good quality content. And you know what? The podcast, the world of Puget Sound Transit doesn't take a break just because somebody has a baby.
So I understand that you are on hiatus from your brother's cocktails.
That's right. I'm on this episode. I'll be on a slight hiatus. I need to be able to, you know, deal with a baby at a moment's notice. So,
okay. Well, if we have to take a break, then we can take a break.
Yeah.
So I am once again drinking whiskey. I will not mention the brand until the sponsorship dollars start rolling in.
Fair enough.
But that's what I'm drinking.
So it was a big. I guess it was a big week for opening dates and opening date news. We had a very funny situation with this first Hill Street car where we didn't have a date. We didn't have a date. We didn't know when it was going to be open. It was 2 years behind schedule. And then all of a sudden, poof, it opened without even really an opening date.
Yeah, that
pretty
was
funny, huh?
That was very strange. That seemed like a very defensive and jittery way to open mm-hmm. a service. I mean, mm-hmm. they had, I don't remember exactly what the interval was, but Centrallink, they announced it, I feel like it was 5 or 6 months ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And with the streetcar, I mean, really, it was kind of the absurd limit of that whole, all that secrecy was something that Zach posted on Twitter. Like a reader of ours called SDOT to ask when it was going to open. And there was this, and this is the day before it was actually going to, and the rumor's already out there that it was going to open the very next day. And so this is a Friday, he's calling SDOT, and they're like, who is this? You know, or are you a reporter? So it doesn't matter. I'm just asking when the thing's going to open. And there's kind of a bit of runaround, and it's kind of amazing. I think it's the STP Twitter, not on Zach's Twitter.
Yeah.
But
I had visions of the Yakety Sax, the Benny Young's theme song playing in the background there.
Yeah, it was kind of ridiculous and easy to make fun of, and I thought about writing something about it, but I just, you know, the whole opening date thing is kind of a parlor game, and it probably doesn't matter very much at all, so I didn't. But it does seem, but on the conversely, you know, just opening, you know, announcing an opening date and kind of sticking to it and maybe having it slip for something silly and understandable, you know, is also not the end of the world,
right?
So it seems like a way to just...
Right. So it opened and there were people riding it. I mean, I saw, you know, the next day or two I was in the neighborhood and I saw some people riding it, and you know, it's free, so I guess people are going to continue to ride it when it's free. We'll see what it does as a commute vehicle come the weekdays if people start using it for that kind of purpose.
Yeah, well, on the very first day I actually had the opportunity to use it as transit, like not to joyride, but I actually needed to get from the Central District to Columbia City, and I had a stroller, so I didn't really feel like dealing with a bus. So the easy roll-on was an advantage, and I took it. Have you had a chance to ride it yet?
No, I haven't ridden it yet.
Mm. And you even live in the city.
No, I know. I just haven't left my house much in the last 2 weeks.
That's a good point. Yeah. You know, it's kind of what you would expect. I mean, it has a lot of the strengths and weaknesses of any mixed traffic streetcar. I mean, it is a really smooth ride, and it's not driven up, it's not slowed up by people messing with the driver.
Right.
And it's the low floor. I mean, actually, oddly enough, it's not flush with the platform. I was disappointed in that.
Huh.
It's actually an inch or two, at least at the station I got on, it was an inch or two above the floor of the vehicle was an inch or two above the platform. Easy to handle with a stroller. But the place was blanketed with SDOT helpers, and the guy was like, "Yeah, you can press this button and lower a ramp." And that kind of made my heart sink a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how slow it is or anything. I didn't have the opportunity to see that in operation, but that seems like a pretty serious own goal.
Do we know what the interface... So with the Center City connector, I imagine... There's no ramps on the South Lake Union Street car, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah. And so I wonder with the Center City connector, especially with the interlining with the buses, how that's going to work in terms of ramp height. Like, there's been talk about sharing stations, which I think will be interesting. Mm-hmm. The different platform heights. I should go read up on that before I talk about it on our podcast.
Yeah, I haven't dug into this and like what the heck happened that they couldn't have level boarding or precisely level boarding. Although it's better than a bus, but it's not as good as it could be.
I mean, we rebuilt the street from scratch. We ordered the cars from scratch. Like,
built the platform from scratch.
I mean, you know, nothing is stock here.
it's curious. And that actually brings me to another point. I feel bad about Seattle Transit Blog's presence in the development of the first streetcar. You know, a lot of times when you look at Sound Transit One projects that have serious issues, you know, particularly around UW Station with that transfer, you know, these decisions were made in 2001, 2002, 2003, and I thought, gosh, if there had been a Seattle Subway, a Seattle Transit Blog, these things wouldn't have happened. Right, if there had been people organized really around the interests of transit riders of the future, maybe we could have avoided some of these missteps. Now, that may be giving us a little too much credit. I mean, we continue to lose these minor implementation decisions for things like Bellevue Transit Center and 130th Street, although we win some other ones. And I know you've compiled a few lists of some things that we have won in the last 5 or 6 years. But, you know, I think when the first Hill streetcar came up, it was just the endless discussion of, is it worth it? You know, is this a silly project? Is it going to have some value? Is it a great project? And just kind of fighting that argument, which was already settled, like it was already going to happen, and not really spending any time worrying about implementation. I wrote one or two posts about signal priority, and, dedicated readers will remember that Seattle Transit Blog warned you quite some time ago that there are only 3 intersections with a signal priority along the whole line. And that SDOT's actual justification for that is along Broadway, there's so many buses crossing that there would be undue effects on very important bus traffic across Broadway. And that doesn't explain what the case is on Jackson, where there are almost no crossing buses at many of those intersections.
Right, I see.
But, so we did cover that point, but I don't feel like there was a lot made of, like, the 14th Avenue deviation, and obviously we didn't know anything about this low-floor issue. And, you know, I mean, it was one or two stories out of however many, and I kind of feel like we weren't, just engage in this little period of self-criticism here. I don't feel like we were terribly engaged in implementation details, which is normally what we do. Right. And for light rail, it's what we do ad nauseum. And I think it's made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But not here.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, if I recall, I don't think I was writing for the blog at the time, or maybe just starting to write for the blog. I don't think I was writing for the blog when they first started planning the first little streetcar. But
the vote on it was in 2008 as part of Sound Transit 2.
Right, right. And then I remember that debate going back and forth. But yeah. Yeah, I don't think I was writing for STB until 2010, 2011. Anyway, I remember a lot of the conversation being around the challenge of, like you said, like, is this a good project? Should we just spend this money on buses, et cetera, et cetera? I also remember a conversation about, you know, I think there was just a lot of bitterness around the First Hill light rail station or lack thereof. There was a lot of conversation about, well, then should we run the streetcar on 12th? Should we run it on Broadway? But I do feel like this is one issue where multimodal nature of the discussions just sort of got out of hand, and it was definitely Broadway became a Christmas tree where every stakeholder group wanted to hang an ornament. And the result, I mean, you can see it in the right of way today.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually, I mean, and that's probably the biggest deal. And somehow I forgot to mention it, so thank you. Yeah, so the decision to put the cycle track on the same street, which was kind of a reaction to the problems that bicyclists have in South Lake Union on Westlake. And, yeah, I mean, that's a real problem now because there's just nowhere to put the – unless you're going to kick out cars, which, you know, might happen someday, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, and if you did, you'd have these weird gaps where all the parking spots were that you can't put – travel lanes or anything, because
exactly there's no real way to improve the reliability and congestion now, which is different from the case in South Lake Union, where it's actually going to go in here soon, and from the Center City connector. So there's nothing. I mean, if they were going to put a cycle track on Broadway, I'd rather have had the train on 12th, or vice versa.
Right.
And I just, you know, we don't really necessarily cover bike issues systematically. We let Seattle Bike Blog cover that. Because they do a great job, but somehow I just missed that until it was already in.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, you got to watch these things, and maybe we should do a better job of steering discussion away from refighting the last war and more on practical decisions that have yet to be made.
Yeah. Well, before we start fighting the next war, tell me about the streetcar. Do you think, after having ridden it and kind of written about it and read what other folks on the site have written about it, what do you think of its prospects? Are you more or less bullish than you were a month ago or a year ago? Or about the same?
About the same. I mean, I don't know how to put a number on what it's going to carry. I do have a sort of... I mean, a lot of times people just use their intuition about what routes are useful. And I don't have a ton of business in either place. And yet I, a couple times a year, find myself thinking, gosh, here I am down in like south of Jackson. And I'd really like to get up to First Hill for something.
Right.
and not really having... I mean, walking all the way to James and slogging up James with like the 3 and like the all I-5 traffic and everything is not really attractive.
Right.
So, I mean, I've actually thought at a couple occasions, boy, I would have really used streetcar here. Or, you know, well, I mean, part of this is, you know, I sometimes go to Seattle University for things during the day. And yeah, I mean, if the best way to get downtown would actually probably be, in many cases, to take the streetcar up to Capitol Hill and then take Link to Westlake.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on some things, but I think that's probably a pretty competitive trip.
And a related note, did you make any note of the Cycle Pronto, the Pronto bike share insolvency?
Oh, I read about it. So, I mean, it was kind of an odd story because I feel like they buried the lead. It's like, oh, Pronto's going under and all this stuff. And then, like, way down, it's like, oh, well, we stopped collecting grants because the city said they were going to take it over. And
yeah.
They're not going to take it over.
Yeah.
So this seems just like a really bad communication problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot of things. I mean, there was an interesting column in the paper this morning. Oh, so we, again, forgot the timestamp. So it's Sunday, January 31st.
Mm-hmm.
The evening. This will probably air on February 1st or 2nd, I imagine. But yeah, in the Sunday paper this morning, there's an interesting column about, you know, I mean, so you can say, well, we're just going to hang it up because this didn't work out, or you can sort of double down on it. And one argument that came forward was just, well, I mean, just our bike infrastructure is so fragmented. I mean, there's a lot of neighborhoods around the United States that are much more intensively used for bikes because they have coherent bike infrastructure plans, whereas we just have gaps where it's inconvenient.
Mm-hmm. But given that we've just passed this Move Seattle levy, which is theoretically going to build out the bicycle master plan, it seems silly to kill the bike sharing program.
Well, I think it's inevitable. I mean, I don't have any doubt that they're going to buy the thing out. And,
yeah.
And double down on it. Like, they're not going to hang it up. There's no way.
Yeah, it would be really weird for Scott Kubley, who ran Alta Bike Share, the largest bike share in organization in North America, before becoming the head of SDOT to turn around and shut down or allow the shutdown of Seattle's bike share system.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the system has a lot of problems.
You ride it. I've never ridden it.
I do ride it occasionally. I mean, so it's about a 10-minute walk from my work to the nearest station. So it has to. So the buses have to, on Denny, have to be a complete disaster for me to ride it to make that worthwhile. But that happens a few times a year, and then I'll go up there and I'll take it unless it's raining too hard. And you know, I mean, it's all right. Like the way it works is pretty well. The only thing that's irritating is the helmets. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a lot of people understand that the helmet law is a real problem for bicycling in general, and it doesn't seem like anything ever happens.
Right.
It just seems like that comment comes up again and again, and nobody wants to take action in the city about it.
Well, the other problem is that it's a 10-minute walk for you. I mean, it's a little bit farther than you would like.
Yeah,
for...
the helmet thing isn't really stopping me, but although the helmets are too small for my head unless I loosen them.
Oh, really?
Definitely. So there's several jokes, I'm sure, that come to mind. But, right, so, but I've, you know, I've gotten it to work, but it's, but yeah, the 10-minute walk is the biggest issue, and it's understandable, because I live in I work at the bottom of a hill, and with not a lot of all-day stuff going on, so mm-hmm. I think there would be serious, operational problems with having a station down there.
Right.
Also, I'd be less inclined to ride up the hill.
Right.
Walking up the hill is almost...
There was one proposal when they were filling out that... They were applying for that federal grant. They were going to take the system citywide. Part of the proposal mentioned e-bikes.
Yeah.
Which would be really interesting as a way to get more... I see a lot more of those, anecdotally. I don't know if you see... In my neighborhood, I see them all over the place now.
People, I don't even notice, but...
Electric bikes. It's become pretty popular. Delivery folks, but also just commuters, especially ones who are, you know, have kids on those kind of giant family sized bikes. Anyway, we're kind of losing the thread here, but yeah, I thought that was really interesting. The cycle, Pronto, or the Pronto, you know, whatever happens. I'm not really sure how it ended up getting in this situation where they kind of did insufficient fundraising, and they also had a fiscal setup where they were, you know, separated from the city in such a way that they weren't able to, they were taking on this, you know, crazy debt load. But whatever it is, I mean, it seemed to make sense.
And also, I mean, setting aside the issue of fundraising, I mean, it's also, the bikes are not terribly well used. I want to say there's something like one ride per day per bike.
Right.
Or something. So, I mean, you know, clearly there's some problems with the demand, as they've constructed this. And, you know, I mean, there's multiple ways to react, but since I really don't think they're just going to can it, then this is probably good news, because this bad publicity will encourage them to actually make the changes they need to make, right, to make it more valuable.
Speaking of looking forward, let's talk a little bit about Ballard and the potential Sound Transit extension for ST3. So my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the latest proposals for running light rail, which we've discussed before on the podcast, up to Ballard, include a new bridge of some kind over the Ship Canal in the vicinity of 15th Northwest.
Well, yeah. Well, SDOT, in their various letter requests, has I'm trying to call up the article right now, but it has generally requested a bridge over the Ship Canal.
In one, they actually requested Sound Transit pay for the rebuild of the Ballard Bridge.
Yeah, so I mean, part of this is they have a bit of they have it on their plate to rebuild the Ballard Bridge, and if they can kind of incorporate this into Sound Transit's budget, that would kind of really work out for them really nicely. So I mean, I don't want to be cynical about it, but it's a little convenient for them. It's maybe a little bit more about capital project convenience rather than
right.
Thinking about riders in 2050. But but it seems like there's a little bit of a movement happening. You know, Seattle Subway helped to get the ball rolling, and I think there's some sort of Ballard Business Association that's on now to actually tunnel under the Ship Canal. which obviously is more expensive in addition to being less convenient for S-Dot, but avoids all the bridge openings that would be kind of a ridiculous thing for a major, you know, trunk line in the city's transportation network.
Right. There was initially some proposals, I guess some of the early proposals from Sound Transit that would have gone through Fremont talked about a tunnel. But I don't remember any of the conversations of a tunnel around 15th Northwest.
Well, those have floated around, and I think it's in some of the Sound Transit concepts, but I mean, I've actually got Zach's article here about Seattle's last letter, which I guess came out last week. And it says, there's a Northwest Seattle Coalition for Sound Transit 3, which is industrial and neighborhood groups, all pushing for this tunnel. And I guess the new S-Dot letter says the process should vet alignment options through a public participation process and consider the ridership cost equity and impact trade-offs. So, I guess organizing works, and I think this organizing has pushed S-Dot from really favoring a bridge to something kind of neutral. And we'll see.
How important is a tunnel to you? I mean, the two impacts that you would have for a bridge is A, the bridge would have to be open, and then B, something that comes up in our common threads from time to time is that a bridge would theoretically prevent the line from being driverless. Although I assume if they're interlining this with Link to Tacoma through MLK, it's never going to be driverless anyway to Ballard.
I mean, I don't think it'll ever be driverless, certainly until driverless technology reaches some sort of point where people are happy with it and someone figures out the labor relations issues. I think it's bad to have something that would be so disruptive to reliability happen on a regular basis. Now, I mean, you might be able to work your way around it. Like, I guess these openings are scheduled. Mm-hmm. I hope they're scheduled. So, I mean, if you had the infrastructure to turn stuff around before the bridge, you could maintain headways the rest of the system. Then, I mean, you asked me how I felt about it. I mean, I don't go to Ballard, so I guess I'd be okay then.
but how much is it worth in terms of additional spend to have a tunnel versus a bridge? I wonder. I mean, I honestly don't know the trade-off. I mean, it kind of feels like if you're going to do it once, do it right and spend the money. But yeah. I think about, it's not like the train would be stuck behind a bunch of cars. I mean, it would go all the way up to the crossing. The bridge would go up and down and then it would go again. I genuinely don't know,
it's not a binary choice. I mean, I think there's higher bridges and lower bridges, and there's like different thresholds for opening. And then, you know, I mean, I think, is it the Coast Guard that controls these openings and decides what happens there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I don't know what their decision process is, but one would think that there's...
The transit priority is not
high up on their list. I'm a little pessimistic about that, but one would think there's some ways to influence that process, and if it becomes a critical issue. Okay. But yeah, having like a really low bridge has to open all the time seems like a poor decision.
Yeah, I agree.
So we also found out about, speaking of light rail, we also found out about U-Link opening.
Yes, that's right.
March 19th, I believe, which is the week before the big metro service change.
Yeah, so it was unclear. We were kind of waiting with bated breath when that was going to happen. It looks like they're going to give themselves a week to have U-Link up and running before the famous U-Link restructures hit Capitol Hill.
Well, it's not Capitol Hill, it's the Northeast.
Or the Northeast, right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk a ton about U-Link right now, and we can save that for March, but we are having a meetup on that afternoon, I want to say, from 3 to 5.
That's right.
Before you and I go to our evening engagements.
That's right.
So Sound Transit clearly did not check with us before scheduling U-Link opening.
It turns out to be a popular evening to have preschool fundraising or school fundraising auctions.
That's correct.
Yes, but we will definitely be there. I'm excited to go ride
the line. Charlie's is the place, I believe.
Charlie's on Capitol Hill, which I haven't been to in years. It's apparently just been reopened.
So while it is a bar, there is a 18 plus or 21 and under 21 place. So we have, I think we have a critical mass of under 21 people, so it'll, hopefully things will. I haven't been to Charlie's to check it out, but I think it'll mingle pretty nicely in spite of all that issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, ride the train on your own, and if you want, or don't ride the train. Show up to Charlie's at 3, and I think we'll have a pretty good turnout.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it, and it's crazy that it's going to be here. That's actually going to be a pretty meaningful. I mean, I don't go Capitol Hill downtown or UW downtown all that much, but I'm definitely going to ride it a decent amount, just kind of going from place to place. I'll find myself needing to take it here and there. I mean, I'm at Montlake a lot at the very least. So,
yeah, well, like I said, I actually go to First Hill enough that it may actually be the way to get up the hill for me, like to do that and then switch to the streetcar or whatever, rather than dealing with a mess on Madison or on James or something.
Right, right. No, that's totally a fair way to avoid a lot of the crowds. I mean, if there was a, and then you get some pronto in there on Capitol Hill, and all of a sudden becomes a pretty compelling situation, I think.
Yeah, I mean, did we ever talk about my First Hill station idea?
You blogged about it, the one you blogged about on the podcast. I don't know if it made it to the podcast or not. I don't remember.
I don't think it did. I mean, yeah. I think it's worth bringing. I mean, while we're talking about First Hill, I know it's not on our agenda, but we don't need to hit the whole agenda.
No, of course not.
the kind of the initial sketch for Solid Transit 3 Green Line is to have three stations roughly parallel with the existing DSTT, one at Westlake, which is a transfer spot, one at Chinatown, which is another transfer spot, and the other one is sort of penciled in at 5th and Madison, which is a nice interface with Madison BRT and all the rest. And I wrote a post just saying, look, it's actually not significantly longer to just move that over to 8th. It's equally far from the freeway, so it's not like it's on the freeway. All the stuff on the west side of the freeway has great service for the existing DSTT. And getting out to 8th, you actually start picking up a lot of stuff on First Hill. All the hospitals, almost SU, but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
The First Hill streetcar isn't really a perfect... it's not the same as a tunnel. Let's put it that way. So, I mean, I think it's something they should really look at. And, there's a little bit of pushback from people who seem to think like, I'll just say they think like Sound Transit staff, to say, oh boy, that I-5 undercrossing was a real, real pain to do engineering-wise, and you'd have to do it twice in a space of, five blocks to go do this. So we don't want to do that, basically. And, I think this is, and look, I'm not a civil engineer, so that's hard, but I also know it's doable because they did it.
Right.
And, it would be a shame to not, I mean, I just think the dynamics of this is that staff is going to be kind of down on it and try to talk up the difficulties. And we really need somebody like Mayor Murray, who I know is pretty passionate about First Hill, or Rob Johnson, or whoever, to really kind of push this a little bit and really make them take a look at it and not only accept the study result, the report at face value, but actually ask tough questions about it and say... and really, really interrogate a lot of the assumptions and really see what's happening here. And I should just close talking about the post. Yeah, I think 8th and Madison is probably a reasonable sort of compromise, but you could actually go all the way up to Bourne and Madison, which would be definitely First Hill. But that would be a bit farther and actually would definitely add expense.
Then you have the famous question. You have the famous question of the First Hill soil.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. We would talk about looking forward and not back. I've never bothered to really completely interrogate the technical issues associated with that. But then this is not in the same place as where that station would have been. I think that station would have been up at like Madison and Broadway or something.
Okay.
And this one's further down. And certainly 8th and Madison is practically downtown.
Right. It does, but I just I wonder where it becomes an issue, or whether it's even an issue. I mean, I don't know. Going back and like kind of, I once not too long ago, I went back because I had this idea for basically, I never published the post, but I had this idea for basically taking this Ballard line and coming in, and instead of having it connect to the main line at Westlake, having it connect to the main line at Convention Place, reopen Convention Place as part of some mega deal with the convention center and the state to like build some underground beautiful transfer center, because we're mm-hmm. rebuilding the convention center anyway. So you'd build some really fantastic train station where the two lines would connect, and then, you know, onto First Hill, and because then you'd get a kind of nice easy arc into First Hill and back. But so I started looking back at those at some of those articles, and you really just get the sense that this is a jittery, skittish agency that just wanted
certainly at that time.
Yeah, exactly. And that they had some grants from, I think it must have been the Bush administration at the time, and they felt like if the project started to run over budget, that they would lose all of their grants. And so it was really just about risk aversion and mm-hmm. There seems to be something about the soil here, but really we just don't want to delay this thing. So we're just going to try to get to University of Washington as quickly as possible. And so I don't know. I mean, again, I haven't read into the details. If anybody wants to send us an email at contact@seattletransitblog.org, anonymity is guaranteed. You can talk to us about what the actual issues were at stake there, but I don't know. Yep. It always seemed a little bit of a dodge to me.
I mean, I think you know, I don't want to paint a whole agency with a particular brush, but I've certainly interacted with certain people at Sound Transit on staff where when they say impossible, they mean hard.
Right.
And I think, and when and hard, of course, means expensive. And I think First Hill's worth it. Like, I think they say it's the densest neighborhood in the state. I'm not sure if that's true anymore, but it is certainly very dense.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly deserves a subway station if we can get it one. Right. And, you know, there's even a university there, which is, of course, always a great demand generator. One thing I find curious about a lot of this is, you know, people, Seattle Subway and others, are still talking about the Metro 8 subway. Which, of course, is, you know, Lower Queen Anne, South Lake Union, maybe Capitol Hill. The Metro 8 does what it does, but a lot of times people roll First Hill into that and then kind of want to wander off into the Central District and then go down towards Judkins Park and then even Mount Baker. Which, you know, okay. But, you know, so what's likely to happen, of course, is this Kubli line, you know, this Ballard, South Lake Union, Westlake thing, where we just had a long conversation about trying to get First Hill in on there. And that would certainly be a much smaller lift than a whole new subway line.
Right.
So, and my sense is not a lot of satisfaction with that from the Metro 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you live in the Central District.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the Central District a fair amount. It's dense, but like, what am I missing about the CD where it's like a must serve with a subway?
Yeah, no, I the density tops off at 12th, right?
Yeah,
maybe 14th is as far west as you actual density, and then you're in kind of single family homeland straight out to the water. Now that's changing a little bit, right? 23rd is getting a little bit more density. Is it something you couldn't serve with a bus? I'm not sure that it is. Other than that, selfishly, it would be very convenient for me to have a subway. I think when I see a subway, I think the demand generators are where you said they are. They are Seattle U. They are that kind of, you know, that growing Northwest. I mean, you could probably argue that the, the top of the hill where the radio towers are around the Trader yeah. Joe's is probably about as far east as high levels of density go, where you would benefit from having a subway.
And to be clear, like something out on, well, two things you mentioned, 14th and 15th, is not really very well served by an 8th and Madison station, although right. I don't know if that's a whole reason to build a whole new subway line. And then the Trader Joe's point is good, too, but the radio tower, which I think was the Trader Joe's location.
Right.
But I don't think geometrically you can really serve First Hill and that in any sensible way.
Right.
By First Hill, I mean the core of First Hill with like the hospitals and.
To be clear, the Metro 8 does not serve First Hill.
right. I mean, right. You know, but people like to roll in First Hill, and I think clearly you want to serve First Hill instead of Trader Joe's and like Park or Madison Valley or whichever one it is.
Madison Valley. That's a different line, and it's a very big tunnel. I think.
I mean, Seattle Subway has a very low threshold for where they want to build rails. So, I mean, I can appreciate that, and I'm not angry about it. I mean, I think building lots of rail would be great. But, I mean, there are other people who are not necessarily Seattle Subway people who are usually very parsimonious with their throwing rail lines around, who just think this thing is great. And then we'll say, like, oh, well, South Lake Union. But, I mean, South Lake Union's covered with this – with the existing plan. So I just don't see it.
Right. Well, I do think there is South Lake Union is quote unquote covered. And I know that, you know, we've said this in the past that like, oh, well, if you just had a South Lake Union, you can transfer at Westlake and you can be a Capitol Hill in, you know, 5 minutes. So what's the point of building a subway? I think there's definitely a lot of truth to that. I do think it's one of these ideas that, I think there's a lot of development going on in the Denny Regrade area, most of which will be in the walk shed of the Kubli line.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, clearly that's covered. I mean, I guess one thing about the CD is the bus service is frequent but incredibly slow.
Right.
And, I think Zach used to live at the end of the 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
In Madrona, and has horror stories about trying to get downtown.
Right. So
I can understand the for people who live in the CD the desire for a faster alternative.
Mm-hmm.
But I and hopefully Madison BRT is that. I don't understand I just don't get like the coalition that's pushing for that in particular. That seems to be beyond people who are just tired of sitting on the 2 for an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. It's a good question. I don't know. I would welcome it.
Maybe someone can enlighten me in the comments.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to slam it. Like I would happily vote for that. I just don't think it's I just don't get how it fits in with general rail skepticism.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe part of it too is like you look at kind of these in-city neighborhoods that have the potential to be denser down the road, right? I mean, mm-hmm. There's a lot of potential in that neighborhood for more development. There's a lot of potential in, in the north end of Mount Baker. Obviously, Mount Baker proper has a station already, but, you know, the north end of Mount Baker, you know, headed towards Judkins Park, there's a lot of infill development there as well.
Well, but how much of that is zoned SF 5000 is the question.
I don't know.
Our single family zones are untouchable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you said it yourself. There's a ton of single. Now, maybe that's all low-rise zoning, even though it's all single-family homes, because that was obviously a depressed area for a long time. Maybe. I don't know.
It's not. It's the multifamily zone ends around 17th or 18th, depending on what street you're on.
Yeah, I mean, there's nodes like 23rd and Jackson.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little strip molly, but there's a lot of, you know, apartment buildings.
And Vulcan just is closing on buying that and redeveloping it. So.
Wow. Okay, well, there you go. That's that subway station. I withdraw my comment. Where do you want to go now?
Well, we should talk a little bit about bus service reliability, maybe. You had a post this week about bus reliability improvements.
You know, we did talk about this last podcast, now that I think about it. Before I wrote it, we did talk about
right. We did talk about it a little bit. Is there anything you wanted to add on it, or?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around this Renton Transit Center thing. So Dan did some investigation on something that came up in one of these local news sites, like a Renton Reporter or whatever it's called. And so the Renton Transit Center, which is in downtown Renton, which is not, frankly, as thriving as some other suburban downtowns. But the Renton Transit Center is there, and the mayor is interested in basically moving the transit center to a sea of parking close to the 167-405 interchange. I don't still completely understand what that's about, but...
wants to build a big parking ride.
Yeah, so well, one of the things is the downtown Renton location is not particularly good for people coming from sort of outer Renton and obviously Point South, because it's way off the freeway, and this thing might in principle get better service from buses traveling on freeways. It might it's certainly easier for people to drive to and park at. Mm-hmm. For buses coming from arbitrary points, it'd be easier to get there than all the way into downtown Renton, but it also seems to be taking a lot of buses away from downtown Renton, which you would think is a place that has a little more potential.
That was the part that was, I think, a little less clear to me. I mean, it seemed to be the case that part of the benefit for this would be to move bus service away from downtown Renton, which seems to be a big net loss. I mean, I looked at this and I said, okay, that's interesting. I guess I'm kind of that camp that I don't love transit centers in general.
Really?
Well, I don't love like the Mount Baker Transit Center. I just don't love the like the bus bays and the like pulling in and out. I like Third Avenue. I like having a mm-hmm. dedicated street where there's a lot of buses running.
Oh, so pulling off the street is your objection, not lots of lines meeting in one place.
No, not necessarily. No, yeah, no. It's more about the way the transit centers, and they end just being this kind of like weird urban dead zone. I mean, I guess the Bellevue Transit Center is okay.
It's pretty good too.
I haven't really spent much time in the Kirkland one.
It's basically on the street.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, so it feels like, I would rather have buses meeting at cross streets and having good transfers that way than having these, transit centers just seem to be a kind of, I don't know, I just don't love them from a bus, from a downtown kind of walkable point of view and from...
Well, you had me as soon as you cited the Mount Baker Transit Center.
Which yeah.
is one of my causes.
And they just seem like they're neither fish nor fowl. It feels like this is saying, he's calling it a new Renton Transit Center. It feels like he just wants to kill the Transit Center and build a park and ride, which is fine. Yep. And he wants to serve the mayor of Renton, right? He wants to build a park and ride that's going to serve his suburban constituents and allow them to drive to the bus. And he's given up on the idea of a transit center revitalizing downtown Renton, right? Or that transit service will revitalize downtown Renton, which is unfortunate, but makes sense in the context of local South Sound politics. But let's just call it a park and ride and not, because I think whether or not bus service runs through downtown Renton should be a separate and apart question from whether or not there's a park and ride on the outskirts of Renton.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point about revitalizing downtown Renton. I mean, it kind of would have happened already were it to happen, if it were going to happen.
Yeah, and it's clear that they don't... You know, they built the Landing, right? I mean, mm-hmm. they built this huge new development with the, you know, very suburban style development with the, I don't know, suburban, new urbanist. What is the Landing? I mean, there's housing and retail and I don't know.
There's this strange new urbanism that's basically sort of an outdoor mall.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you have the massive parking at one end so you can walk around.
Right.
But it's not,
Yeah, so I don't. I guess I feel like if they wanted to actually build out downtown Renton, they would have pursued a different strategy than to build the kind of giant mall out on the edge of town.
Well, the thing with the Landing is you had all that empty Boeing land, so
right.
It's kind of a brownfield thing. You don't have to irritate anybody. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think one of the questions for me is like how many bus. I mean, this plan doesn't come with a new bus route framework. Right. So it's hard to tell, like, what is the actual impact on downtown Renton? Like, if all the buses are still going through, basically, then it really doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter if they actually stop. I mean, it's kind of nice to have a junction point where everything is getting together because you have maximum connectivity. But, yeah, I mean, I do sort of agree that it seems like whatever the historic downtown is, the city's center of gravity might be moving somehow. I don't understand your vision for the land use in that city well enough to know what this is all about. Like, I mean, is that sea of parking going to be a sea of parking forever? Or do they have some sort of grand design for that?
It seems very unclear to me, especially because where the transit center is, to my understanding, is much closer to the historic downtown, which has more potential for some kind of a walkable, you know, revitalized neighborhood. So...
Sure.
I don't know.
But I mean, Renton's not going to get rail transit for a long, long time, so they're basically going to be stuck with freeway-based transit. So, don't you kind of have to be by the freeway,
right?
To have decent.
No, I think that's I think that's a fair point.
A rapid bus service, yeah. More accurately.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think it's going to be commuter oriented. Yeah, I find Renton to be somewhat of a tragic case of not quite figuring out how to get ST to pay attention to them, or maybe they tried and they just weren't successful, but it just seems like
I'm sorry, following on the I mean, whoever drew the boundaries that they were in the east side,
that was a huge mistake.
Didn't do them any favors.
Yeah, they should have never been the east side. They should have been a South Sound city,
and they would have been a fairly significant it would have a lot much more influence, I think, than when they're not going up against Bellevue and Redmond and Kirkland.
Especially because there's really very little that connects them. I mean, when you look at, I mean, I think it's easy to look at the 405 corridor and look at those cities on the east side of Lake Washington in one big strip and consider them together. But they're from Bellevue to Redmond and Kirkland is a kind of contiguous strip of developed land, but there's a fairly large barrier. I mean, there's a big hill and a lot of it is a park separating Bellevue from Renton. The 405 is basically the only way through. There's really not much in terms of like neighborhood connective tissue connecting Renton to any of the other east side cities.
Well, I mean, the Sound Transit service that Renton does actually get going through Renton, I believe, is almost entirely stuff going up 405.
Right.
Is that right? Yeah, because there's nothing going up 167 to Seattle, and the Sounder is technically in Tukwila, I think.
Right.
Unless it's on the border between Tukwila and Renton.
Right, yeah, I guess I mean, you're right that Sound Transit does have service on the east side, I guess, from Renton up north. I guess my point was when you're building out transit service, you'd like to have a contiguous urban fabric where people board and get on and get off and kind of, you know, could potentially live and work and play in kind of various destinations in this kind of contiguous fabric. And that fabric really stops just south of Bellevue.
Yeah, whereas Renton, you can't tell where Renton stops and Tukwila begins.
Right, exactly. A new fabric, a new South Sound fabric starts. Yeah. You know,
and you know, Renton. And it seems like a very. You kind of wonder what they were thinking, because here we are. I mean, granted, East Link was a really high priority, but here we are in 2016, thinking, "Gosh, what are we going to do? Or like, what are we going to give the East Side that's worthwhile in ST3.
Mm-hmm.
The South Sound, I mean, the South Sound actually doesn't have that much to do either, but I mean, I could come up with about three cool things to do with the South Sound that we're probably not going to get to. We're probably not going to get all day Sounder. That would be great. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot you could do in Berrien Renton BRT. I mean, I have a hobby horse here that is not, that seems to have disappeared. So, I wrote a whole thing because, I mean, I think David Lawson wrote up the initial Berrien Renton study results and kind of slammed Berrien Renton as an option, and I wrote a defense of it. And, you know, whether rail or bus or whatever, but there was a wonderful project in there. So, as you know, the F line, it comes from, well, maybe you don't know, but it leaves Tukwila International Boulevard. It kind of goes down that...
The F Rapid Ride bus line.
Yes, it goes. It's staying north of the freeway, the 519 freeway, and then has to turn right to go over 405 to go in the South Center and wander around and take all these left turns and then go serve the Sounder station and all this other stuff. I mean, it's very circuitous. And there's a bridge, and before you cross 405 going east, there's a bridge that passes over the road that also passes over 519. And one of the projects and one of the variants of the bus service was to basically build an on and off ramp for buses to get on that bridge. And then you get to wiggle around on relatively uncongested roads instead of in South Center. And then you shoot across, I think that's Strander, that's south of South Center, and then you have a straight shot into Tukwila. So there, it gets rid of an ungodly number of left turns. And that's kind of disappeared. Like, I don't see that in even the high investment version. I think there's still... The low investment version just basically stay on the freeway and don't serve anything. And the high investment version is, get, you know, have some more stuff, but not that project, which is a real shame because it seems like a opportunity to really straighten the line. I mean, every time people bash Brian Renton, they look at bad F-line ridership. But the F-line takes something like 50 minutes to get from Tukwila to the landing, and that's maybe like a 20-minute drive, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, this is...
It's rapid ride.
Well, because it does a lot... It does a lot of...
Yeah.
It's not even the speed of the thing. It's just that it takes a very circuitous route because the road... Because South Center is the junction of two freeways, and that ruins the road grid in a way that prevents you from easily making... Right. Deviating off a straight line. So, yeah, I mean, I'm more optimistic about that than some other people. And yet, it seems like that project had disappeared in later iterations of planning, and that's really kind of too bad.
You should write a post about it.
I should write a post about it.
Trying to bring it back.
I should bring it back. Good idea. That's a good idea. For okay.
There you go.
Positive. That's probably enough about BRT for one day.
Yeah. Well, did you want to, before we go out, did you want to tell us anything about, did you want to talk at all about the District 7?
Yes.
So, race for Congress?
I have a little rant about this. So there's a little of excitement in the press, not on Seattle Transit blog, for reasons that will become evident. There's a little excitement on the press about, well, Jim McDermott is retiring from the U.S. Congress after 20-something years, 30-something. Yeah. A long time. And there's a bunch of people seeking to get that seat. I know Brady Walkinshaw, who's a representative from the 43rd, basically Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Pramila Jayapal, who's a relatively very new senator from my district, 37th. Joe McDermott, who's a county council member from West Seattle. I think there are a couple more, but I don't remember who they are. But basically the one point I would make out of this is... I want to strongly encourage our readership to not care very much about the outcome of that primary. Whoever wins that primary is the Democratic primary is going to win that seat as a metaphysical certainty. And the structure of the House is such that the specific foibles and ideological particulars of any of these candidates do not matter at all for outcomes in the U.S. House. And I mean, if you find it interesting, I don't blame these people for wanting to run for Congress. It's a good job, especially compared to state legislature, which is a terrible job.
Yeah.
So I don't blame people for wanting to run for it. But if you kind of find the horse race interesting, fine. But if you are thinking about giving money to any of these candidates to prevail in the Democratic primary, please find something more constructive to donate to. Probably something outside of politics is the most constructive thing to donate to. But if you must donate to politics, there's a lot of interesting stuff at the local level around land use and priority given to cars, where that actually is pretty controversial even in Seattle. Lots of city council members that have different positions on that. And even at the state level, there's lots of marginal legislative seats that can influence the situation in the House and the Senate. Which has much more relevance to things like transit funding, although we've gotten most of what we want out of the legislature for the next 15 years. All that would be more productive than trying to shape
right
exactly which Democrat represents the 7th District in Congress.
Duly noted. Yeah, I'm interested to see who it is, only because it'd be interesting to have a different. Although I'm not actually in that district. You're not in that district either, are you?
I am not. We used to be, but they put us in Adam Smith's district to create a minority district.
Yeah, I'm in the same district.
I think. So we have no say on this. Pramila Jayapal is my senator, and I guess Brady Walkinshaw is your representative, correct? You're in the 43rd, are you?
No, I'm in the 37th.
Oh, you're in the 37th. Okay, yeah. We're both outsiders.
Yeah.
On this one.
Yeah.
But you still shouldn't care. And you know, it's interesting with the. I mean, so the 37th and the 43rd are both safe seats. So by the same token, it really doesn't matter a ton.
Who replaces them?
Who replaces them? But I mean, Joe McDermott. So County Council is a big deal. From a transit perspective, I mean, obviously they're the board for Metro and all of Metro's decisions,
right?
And those are the kind of decisions that are not necessarily fall along. Well, some of it falls along partisan lines about tax levels, but what's really interesting is all the restructuring stuff, which is not a left right thing. And I think Joe McDermott's on the Sound Transit board, if I'm not mistaken.
He is, yes.
He is. So that's another big thing. He hasn't been around that long because he replaced Dow Constantine and became county executive. I don't have a very strong. I mean, he hasn't done anything just massively objectionable for sure. But I haven't gotten much of a read on him. I would be interested to see Zach's perspective because he sits through all those meetings. So, but it would be interesting to think if he were to win that congressional seat, what that would mean for his replacement, and how that would change representation in West Seattle.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, I do think he has basically been pretty good on our issues, and so I don't know. He seems like kind of the long shot of the three of them so far, but what do I know? I guess Pramila has some of the early buzz, but I'm going to stop caring about it just on your recommendation.
Why, thank you. That's a healthy attitude.
I'm way more concerned about the 2020 redistricting now is the most important issue on the federal level.
But we're one of the good states.
I know, and there's nothing we can do about it. So,
yeah. Well, you could give money to legislative candidates in other states.
That's true. That's true. I could do that.
Where this matters.
Yeah. All right, sir. Unless you've got anything else, I think we can call it here at under an hour.
I have us over an hour, but okay, sure. All the more reason.
All the more reason. All right, I will talk to you hopefully next time when I've gotten a little bit more sleep.
Yeah, rest up.
All right.
All right.